Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning, you may be seated. First case in our calendar is 132 and 170, Gerald R. Davidson versus Motors Mutual Insurance Company. Mr. Curley.
Thank you. Please support Gerald Curley for the County Motors Mutual Insurance Company. I deserve 3 minutes for the question.
Watch your time.
Court of Appeals held in this case that standard homeowners insurance policy provides uninsured motorist benefits for injuries sustained in an automobile accident. We believe that decision is incorrect for 4 reasons. First, it's not consistent with the legislative intent behind 39-37-18. Second, it's inconsistent with the reasoning of the Delapovai decision and the recent decision of this court. Three, it's not consistent with the reasonable expectations of the contracting parties and the employees of parties for old fashioned insurances. 39-37-18 requires insurers selling a motor vehicle liability policy to offer as a part of that policy uninsured motorist coverage. Only if this court interprets the phrase motor vehicle liability policy to include a homeowner's policy may appellees prevail here. Appellees contend that because this homeowner's policy provided supplemental coverage for liability arising out of the use of certain types of trailers, golf carts, off-road recreational vehicles, and service vehicles, constitutes a motor vehicle liability policy. But these vehicles are clearly not motor vehicles, as that term is defined in Ohio law. This is clearly not a motor vehicle liability policy, as that term is used in the U.S. statute. This court in the Delapovai case, the decision has been completely ignored by all of the courts of appeal who have handled this issue in the past 2 years. Held that the uninsured motorist statute the Financial Responsibility Act are to be construed together. Under that decision, this court announced that the definition of motor vehicle found in 4509, a device capable of transporting persons or property on a highway, should be used to construe the U.S. statute. And I submit that that's the common understood meaning.
But on some of these covered vehicles are capable of that?
They're not designed for use on a highway.
They're capable of being run on a highway, though, are they not?
A golf cart can be run on a public highway, but that's not what they were designed
snowmobile?
For. That's snowmobile? That's not one of the exceptions in this policy.
All right, what are the exceptions?
Trailer, not connected.
These are the covered
these
motor
are,
vehicles.
These are the devices for which coverage is provided.
All right, go ahead.
A trailer not hooked up to a motorized car.
Right.
A golf cart used on golf course is specifically set.
Acceptable to be driven on the highway. That can be driven on the highway.
It's not designed for use on highway. That's not
all
the
right.
purpose of the golf cart. The next point is recreational vehicles, but the policy specifically says off-road recreational vehicles. The fourth category service vehicles or vehicles.
How is it going to get to the off-road if it doesn't use a highway to get to the off-road?
How can you put on the back of a trailer, transport it in a truck?
Okay.
That's not, these are ATVs, dirt bikes, I think is what this policy is providing coverage for. Devices that are clearly not designed or commonly used for transporting persons on highway.
Okay.
The reason I think that the court decided to go by the way it did was the notion that the Financial Responsibility Act and the UM statute are related in purpose. And the General Assembly intended them both to apply to these types of vehicles, highway vehicles, transporting persons or things on the highway. This is exactly what the 4-3 majority of this court decided in the Del Bovi case, contrary to what appellees have stated in their brief. None of the vehicles for which liability coverage is provided in this policy were designed or commonly used for transportation on public highways. And as I said, the Court of Appeals failed to even mention the Del Bovi or discuss its significance. We believe these two sections of code are very much related in purpose. What the legislature has done here is first mandate that every motorist must obtain financial responsibility insurance, liability insurance, motor bonding, must comply with financial responsibility obligations if you're going to operate a car as a motor vehicle on the highway. Second, what the legislature has done in 3937 is it recognizes that not everybody is going to comply with their obligation to buy insurance. What they've said in 3937 is if you comply with your obligation to procure financial responsibility insurance, if you buy a motor vehicle liability policy, the state of Ohio is going to ensure that you have the opportunity to buy insurance that will make sure that you and your family don't go uncompensated if you are injured by somebody who doesn't comply. The state of Ohio basically says, if you comply with your obligation, you do what we're telling you that you have to do to protect others from the consequences of your negligence, we're going to make sure that you have the opportunity to buy insurance to protect yourselves from those who don't.
Well, isn't the rest of your argument that I read in one of the amicus briefs, I guess, that the insurance department would not even recognize a homeowner's policy? I mean, you can't get underinsured motorist coverage in a homeowner's policy. Is that...
That's right. The Department of Insurance licenses companies to write homeowner's insurance, automobile insurance, or in many cases, both. But there are some companies that are licensed in this state to only write homeowner's.
So if we hold here that underinsured coverage somehow fits under this policy, we're saying in effect to people that drive motor vehicles, you don't have to have a motor vehicle policy. Is that part of your argument?
Well, sure it is, because by buying a homeowner's policy like this, if that's the only kind of policy that a person buys, he's doing nothing to comply with his obligation of financial responsibility in the state. He's doing nothing to protect others out on the highway from the consequences of his own negligence. I think what you're looking to is this comment in the Western Reserves case, which I think is a good one, and that is that if a company is licensed to sell only homeowners insurance in Ohio, the Court of Appeals decision says you have to offer UM coverage because we construe that as being a motor vehicle liability policy. But the Department of Insurance says, no, if you're only licensed to sell homeowners insurance, you can't sell uninsured motorist coverage in the state. We don't let you do that. How is a company that only writes homeowners insurance supposed to comply with the mandate of the Court of Appeals decision?
Couldn't a carrier just as easily say in the policy, however, this is not a motor vehicle liability policy by explicit language under any terms or conditions?
Then you get into the argument of does a label of the policy really control the obligations of the parties? I'm sure
that's a label. That would be a provision, like one of the little exclusions in page 17 and footnote 3.
Sure, they could say this is not a motor vehicle policy, but the argument of the appellees is if you provide coverage for golf carts, trailers, off-road recreation vehicles, we don't care what you say on page 12. On page 16, you're providing limited liability coverage, and if these are motor vehicles, it's a motor vehicle policy anyway. So I'm not sure that would do an insurance company much good. A person who buys a homeowner's insurance policy has done nothing to protect members of the general public from the consequences of his negligence. In the eyes of the legislature, a person who fails to do that doesn't get the opportunity under 3937.18 to buy UM coverage. I think the decision of the Court of Appeals should also be reversed because it's not consistent with the reasonable expectations of the contracting parties. Quite frankly, this doesn't make common sense. Every court that has considered this issue, beginning with the Franklin County Court of Appeals in Gottenor in 1996, has acknowledged that it is not the intention of the individual or the homeowner's insurer to get to either buy or sell protection against the negligence of uninsured motorists. If you were to ask Mr. Davidson or any other consumer whether he would thought that when he bought this homeowner's policy, he was also buying insurance that would protect him if he were injured in a car accident, he would certainly tell you that he never thought of this bond coverage. Even without sophisticated insurance knowledge, no reasonable consumer expects to get uninsured motorist coverage or any type of automobile coverage when he or she buys homeowner's policy.
Counsel, what was covered under this policy? If you get a four-wheeler that was covered?
An ATV, four-wheeler. If I owned a four-wheeler and I were driving it on my property and I had a passenger and they fell off and was injured.
Okay, if he sued me, if you were driving it lawfully down the road and on or underinsured motorist negligently struck you, what happens then?
You would look to the terms of your personal auto policy first, I would think, the policy where you intended to buy a new coverage. And I don't know how your policy is worded, but typically it says that the negligent driver is the operator of an uninsured motor vehicle. You're entitled to coverage. I would look at the homeowner's policy for coverage.
Perhaps you didn't. You know, it would be unusual that you owned a four-wheeler that did own an automobile that you insured, but perhaps you didn't. Would you have a claim there for under or uninsured coverage?
Under a homeowner's policy,
where that kind of vehicle is specifically contemplated to be covered.
You have liability coverage for a vehicle, but you don't have uninsured motorist coverage. And that really is why we're here. This is a homeowner. Is there a U.S.
Right. But, so the same principle would, part of your argument as to why you wouldn't get coverage here. Doesn't that collapse a little if you're on a vehicle that was intended to be insured
in this case
under the homeowner's policy?
And it perhaps gives you a little stronger argument, but that's not how Mr. Davis is acting.
I mean, you articulated it very efficiently when you opened your argument to four reasons why you should win. It seems to me a couple of those would evaporate. If you were on a vehicle, it was kind of foolish to be insured on the policy.
I think it's a stronger case that this court, I think, has to look at the same picture on the specific facts of this case. That's not how Mr. Davis.
Right, I understand. It's not here.
We think the decision of the lower court is an unanticipated windfall for the Davises because it was not contemplated. It's not the reasonable expectation of either of the parties. I know this is probably not legally significant, but when we as attorneys attempt to explain a decision like the lower court's decision, in this case to non-lawyers, the typical reaction is, what are you talking about? That doesn't make common sense. And I think when that kind of a reaction, when we get that kind of reaction from the lower public, judges need to look at lower court decisions about this and wonder, are they covering this guy?
That was your argument before Judge Connor, too, and as I recall it, his opinion, he put in a footnote someplace that I don't find this not to be in accordance with common sense or something like that. And he cited the Gottenmuller case pretty extensively as a controlling authority from the Court of Appeals to which, in fact, he reports. How do you distinguish that case from the 10th District?
Well, Judge Connor obviously was obligated to follow that decision, and this court is not. The only significant difference which in this case in the Gottmore case, this was a homeowner's policy. What the court in that case focused on was the fact that liability coverage was provided for recreational vehicles. And they looked at 4501 and said recreational vehicles are included in this definition of motor vehicle. I think, I don't know, but I think that the Court of Appeals, when it decided that case, was thinking of recreational vehicles as these 40-foot-long vehicles with a kitchen and a dining room that you live in, since you travel across town. And that would clearly fall within the definition. In the motorist policy, it specifically talks about off-road recreational vehicles, so in the policy language, we have a difference. I think it may be hard to harmonize Gottmore with a decision reversing the Court of Appeals in this case, but I think we can do that by saying the Gottmore court looked at the wrong definition of a motor vehicle, 4501, instead of 4509. They concluded that the term motor vehicle liability policy was not defined in the Ohio Revised Code. It is defined in the Ohio Revised Code and in 4509. And I think they look at Gottmore and they say they made an honest mistake.
And they didn't refer to Delabobie. One more reason they didn't consider that case. I know that. This case, though.
Right. The other Court of Appeals decisions that have been cited in the past year and a half have been considered Delabobie dyes. I think that's wrong. We not even discuss this.
Thank you, Mr. Curley. Mr. Roberts.
May it please the court. You have to start the issues in this case specifically follow from a first examination of the motorist policy. There's no question here that the motorist policy provides liability coverage to an insurer for motor vehicle accidents that occur on the public roads as well as to accidents occurring on the insured premises. Specifically, the motorist policy provides liability coverage, one, to an insurer for injury to residential employees arising out of the insurer's use of a motor vehicle. If I hire someone to help me around the house or something, and he's working on the garden, and I put him in the car and I drive him up to someplace on 270 to get some tools, and I negligently lose control of the motor vehicle, and this residential employee, which is defined as a policy to be an employee or essentially an independent contractor, is seriously injured, that this policy would provide $300,000 of liability coverage to me to protect that employee. The policy likewise provides liability coverage to an insured for injury arising out of the insured's use of recreational motor vehicles, dirt bikes, ATV, go-karts, golf carts, as well as motor vehicles used to service at home.
In fairness, counsel, when you discuss this provision of coverage, in fairness, we ought to start with the proposition that the policy excludes coverage for motor vehicles, and then we're talking about specific exceptions.
Yeah,
right?
In terms of the way the policy, yes, Your Honor, in terms of the way the policy is drafted, the policy essentially has a broad exclusion that excludes essentially liability arising out of the use of motor vehicle, and then it goes on to say that this exclusion does not apply to certain persons and or certain kinds of vehicles. So that's the way the policy is drafted. The exclusion, the automobile exclusion used, essentially Justice Cook's example, is specifically said not to apply to essentially injury to employees around the household, regardless of whether or not that injury arises out on a public freeway, 270, I-71 south, and so on, as well as not applying to recreational motor vehicles on the premises, certain kinds of vehicles used to service the home, and so on. Given the scope of this particular policy, we believe the case is controlled by Stiglander versus Erie Insurance Group, which was decided by this court only 18 months ago. In that particular case, as you recall, the court had before a liability policy that provided incidental motor vehicle liability coverage where a company employee, for instance, caused an automobile accident on the job while using his own car. In this case, the court has before it another liability policy. We can toss out the labels of whether it's a homeowner policy or auto policy, just taking a look at what they said, regardless of what we think they intended, let's look at what they said, what they wrote. In this case, the court has before the liability policy that provides motor vehicle liability coverage. In this case, Mr. Davidson, if he injures an employee out on the public road with his car, or Mr. Davidson, his residential employees, another insured, if they injure each other in certain circumstances with the use of recreational vehicles, go-karts, ATV vehicles, and so on.
The part of the Sullender case to which you refer is dicta in that case, isn't it, counsel? It's not necessary to the holding?
Let me see. The holding in that case specifically, Your Honor, was to the effect that where the court held that where a motor vehicle liability policy provides, even in a limited form, vehicle liability coverage, and essentially uninsured motor coverage has to be part of the policy. That was essentially the gist of the holding of the case, even though there was a court development. And if you look at this policy, this coverage here is as broad, if not broader, than the motor vehicle liability coverage provided in Sealander, or the endorsements they use therein. And under Sealander, as I just recited, where this court held that where incidental motor vehicle coverage is provided, then uninsured motor coverage has to follow. In the example that I just proposed, if Mr. Davidson catastrophically injured his employee out of an I-270 with his own car, and got sued for $300,000, he wouldn't consider this coverage incidental. It'd be really important to him. Okay? To prevail in this case, essentially the appellant has to distinguish Sealander. And how do they do this? Well, you just heard the argument. And essentially on page 11 of their brief, consistently they say the motor policy here doesn't provide liability coverage for vehicles that are operated on the public highway. Absolutely 105% wrong. The motor policy does, in fact, do that. It's interesting to note that they were never so bold as to make that statement to the trial court.
Did you argue that the resident, this resident employee issue below, as you know, the appellant says you did not, and you can't raise it here for the first time?
Well, let me see. Your Honor, essentially what was argued below in the trial court was that Section 2 of the policy, which was attached to the motion for summary judgment, essentially created automobile vehicle liability coverage, and that was likewise attached to the appellant's brief in court appeal. So this language has been before both the trial and court appeal. The issue of their kind of raising it for the first time, keep in mind that I mentioned it in my brief because of their mischaracterization of the policy, saying that this policy doesn't insure vehicles out on the public freeway. Well, that's absolutely wrong. I'm not going to let that policy stand. We didn't get into that in the trial court because they didn't raise, they didn't make that statement before the trial judge.
So the connection, clearly, though, is that you are buying a homeowner's policy to protect X in the issue of the policy, correct? Your servant, your employee, whatever your maid,
right,
is protected because they're in your employ who comes to your home, and the errand they run is somehow connected to whatever is really in the home.
Correct. They have to. That's how residential employees define the policy.
And the policy clearly states that person gets coverage when they're in your home or if they're out and about on an errand. Okay? Correct?
Yes, ma'am.
The policy also clearly states we don't cover your auto. Correct?
Well, yes, there's an automobile liability exclusion, as Justice Cook pointed out, but from that, certain things are excluded. Yes.
Yes, but it clearly says your personal auto is not covered. It's not an auto policy. Correct?
No, it never says it's not an auto policy.
All right, well, you won't press about that.
Yeah.
Let's go to the next point. So you're driving your maid to the store.
Yes.
In your auto. Yes. And you have an accident. Mm-hmm. Your maid can get coverage from an auto policy?
Let me see. I don't answer that, Judge. I have to say with my policy, but let's
you
see.
Do?
Though I don't know. That usually turns into terms of policy.
Well, okay. Usually, if you injure, you have a passenger and you're at fault, the passenger recovers.
Yes.
Okay, and you are injured, so you get uninsured motorist coverage, or you don't get any coverage. If you're at fault, you don't get any coverage.
Under the other policy.
All right. Let's say somebody else is at fault. They get coverage under your policy? or they go there on policy.
And you have to distinguish which policy you're talking about. If I've got my...
I'm talking about your auto policy.
Okay.
The date is injured, you're driving, date is injured, somebody else is involved.
Okay, there is December 14th, yes.
Okay, the 14th doesn't have coverage, does your passenger have UMC?
Under, that terms of policy, Your Honor, but in most circumstances, you're going to have UMC.
And you get UMC?
Assuming that I purchased it, so I get it.
And what you are attempting to do is now convert any homeowner's policy that provides any sort of coverage for any vehicle, whether it be off-road, on-road, connected to home or not, you're trying to read in now UMC coverage to that policy.
Yes, although that kind of begs the question, doesn't it, Judge? I mean, the issue, because...
So that is the question. You are trying to read UMC coverage in my operational law to every homeowner's policy that has any motor vehicle on or off-road.
I'm trying to read in uninsured motorist coverage on the liability policy that insures vehicles on the public freeway as well as vehicles off the public freeway. That is my...
The only way you get to a public freeway on this policy is through the name.
That's correct, Your Honor.
But the other one, you agree the policy clearly intends these other vehicles to be off-road.
Yes, Your Honor. That is correct.
Mr. Roberts, the appellant, as you know, the appellant makes the argument that the insurance department would not approve a policy such as we have here with underinsured motorist coverage. What's your response to that?
My response to that is that would have been the rejected in C-Lander. In fact, all of the arguments being raised by the applicant here was rejected in C-Lander. The only argument that really was not addressed in C-Lander was obviously the decision which the court held that an aircraft, a helicopter in the Delagobi case, was essentially not the kind of vehicle contemplated by the uninsured motorist act. And I don't think that decision is going to be controlled here because it simply held that the UM section was limited to the motor vehicles being used on the public road. Well, all of these vehicles that are insured in the motor policy can be used on the public road.
To reverse this case, do we have to overrule C-Lander?
Yes. I think as you wade through this and you ask yourself, why did the homeowner carriers start to insure motor vehicles, even in limited circumstances here, either on the public road or essentially off the public road? And as one of the counsel for the amicus brief has said in oral argument, it was because the homeowner's insurance industry was trying to plug holes that they perceived in their auto policy. And plug those holes is exactly what they did.
Does the homeowner's policy cover injuries received by the insured?
Injuries received by...
Yeah, say an insured slipped on something on the floor in his house and he received injuries in his home. Can he make a claim against ostensibly himself?
Well, let me see. No, generally not, Your Honor, but the...
Generally not.
Generally.
The homeowner and anyone occupying the home is not covered for injuries received in or about the house, as a visitor would be, as a neighbor coming into my house and falling down a faulty stairway. If an insured fell down a faulty stairway, can he collect?
Generally, no, Your Honor.
All right. So, generally speaking, an insured is not covered for injuries received by an insured.
Speaking with progress, that's true. That's not true with this specific policy because they include residential employees as an insured as well. As a practical matter, as a residential employee is injured out in 1970 by my negligence.
Well, we're not talking about a residential employee.
Okay.
That's not part of this case, is it?
Well,
we're talking about an
insured.
Aren't we talking about an insured who was injured in an auto accident? Maybe I've got the wrong case. I thought we were talking about...
Well, let me see, what we're really talking about is whether or not this particular policy provides vehicle liability insurance compared
right.
to the UM statute.
Right.
And in that circumstance, it would arise under a situation where the insured is is injured by an underinsured motorist.
Mr. Roberts, isn't it more likely that, I don't know this, but it seems to me it's at least as you could conclude that this coverage is offered in a homeowner's policy because there's a market for it, because the companies realize that there's a proliferation of golf carts and these kinds of vehicles that are used off the road on the premises of the residential owner, that's more likely the reason that's offered in a homeowner's policy than that they're trying to fill some gap in a motor vehicle policy?
It
could be easily filled in a motor vehicle policy, couldn't it? I mean, why not?
Let me see. In making that comment, I was just reciting an oral argument made by Mr. Gallagher in the District Court of Appeals in response to a question by Gary Tyatt, saying why? Okay, why the homeowners come off and start preferring motor vehicles? And essentially, the response is they were trying to fill gaps within the auto policies. And in filling the gap there, they didn't look at the U.M. statute. And that was really in response to a question as to who's created this particular problem. It's not been created by the courts. Created by essentially certain decisions that the insured carrier made, and in the same fashion, it's one that's easily corrected and remedied.
Could
it has been over the past 2 years, ever since the Gotham decision came out, because all they had to do was rewrite the policy.
Mr. Roberts, could back to the issue of whether Selinder can whatever, if this case requires reversal of Selinder, isn't it possible to decide this case based on Delabovi and to distinguish the Selinder case based on the difference in the policy, where that particular policy, a business liability policy, provided coverage for hired and non-owned automobiles? The factual difference between this case and that would provide a basis for distinguishing it and relying on Delabovi.
I don't think so, Your Honor. When I read the Delabovi case, I read it to say that essentially the UM statute is, quote, limited to something that can be operated on a highway or public road. Okay. And hence an aircraft.
No, it didn't. The case say that the two that the section of the financial responsibility section of the code is important to understanding the UM section.
That is true, but that wasn't the holding of the case. The holding of the case was whether or not the aircraft was covered by UM.
Okay.
The court so holding that it was not, because what was contemplated was something used out of the public freeway.
And then. Then we
all
go.
Of the vehicles under this policy can be used on the road. All
yeah,
of
them. And like, so we'll limit ourselves to holding both with the Selinder case, as you want to call it, and we'll limit it to the holding of that case too. So maybe we won't be hung up with that case, particularly the section of the case that's broad dicta that seems to be important to the 10th District opinion. We'll just use the holding.
And you're referring to Selinder, I'm sorry, Delabovi.
Well, you said Delabovi that wasn't the holding, and so I say likewise, the particular section of Selinder.
I understand, Your Honor. Except the coverage here is probably broader than what was the
Counsel, your light's on, but before you sit down, I'm interested in your statement that homeowners and policies got into this area because they're trying to fill gaps. To make their insurance so they have total coverage of their exposure. You've got automobile policies, and then you've got your homeowners, which covers more things than just being a homeowner.
Yes.
If you're exposed to outside of the home. Following that, then in this case, was there not a motor vehicle policy that provided uninsured and underinsured?
Yes, Your Honor. As I recall, the policy term.
So the gap was filled in this particular case?
The gap was, he had a source of compensation inadequate, but a source of compensation from his auto carrier. That's correct.
Okay. We're just looking at your theory of gap filling. Might it be appropriate to, in terms of trying to arrive at some common sense resolution, to look at what was available there, and I think what was available here, and if one has higher limits than the other, then you could possibly get into, for example, if you only had 100 available.
Exactly what was going through.
Is that what the problem was? And here you have 300.
Yes, sir. Although, as a practice, if I may respond to that.
Sure.
The reason I raised the gap filling and debt filling argument is because you talk about a section with common sense here kind of dictates. Common sense dictates that if you're going to fill gaps in auto policy, you better comply with the auto statute. Nothing commonsensical about that. And that's essentially what they fail to do. And it's a problem so easily corrected, which is what it's occurring.
Thank you, Mr. Roberts. Mr. Curley, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds. You don't have to. It's a gift.
Justice Sweeney, the point you made about homeowners coverage not providing coverage for people who are insured was exactly the point that you made in Cincinnati. Number two, Sue Lander does not have to be overruled to his first decision. Clearly, because it provides coverage for non-owned autos to be used on public highways, the Erie policy and Sue Lander complied with the insurance responsibility allegations of that new public.
He says that section of the contract was, I guess, before the trial court. Was there? There was no discussion, or what about the Court of Appeals?
It wasn't. This court is to decide if the Court of Appeals committed error, and the Court of Appeals never considered that issue.
Okay.
You touched when you opened on an argument that I find attractive, but it seems to me in unwinding this whole thicket of issues that we seem to be embroiled in all the time and under and uninsured. Motors coverage. You touched on the benefit of the bargain and what the parties likely thought they got and bought. Well, that's exactly where we went clear back in Savoy, and nobody much liked that. I mean, we unfolded a common sense kind of idea as to what people, their insurance agents, or brokers, everybody sort of thought they bought. And nobody like that, and I don't see much support for that in the law. I mean, it's an attractive idea. It's always there.
I don't want to bring up those jokes.
Yeah, well, I'm not trying to revisit that. I mean, just the concept itself of trying to read into this. What if people assume they're protecting the world?
I think a lot more people would assume that don't have auto coverage under homeowner's policy than people would assume they have a type of coverage that this court kind of would be doing policy in support. That's
a little better time.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Curley. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.